You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back. It's Tuesday, and here's what's going on in Southeastern this glorious, glorious morning. We took ourselves a break yesterday, but it's time to come back to the news. It's time to come back to things that are about this community, this area of Wisconsin. And who better to talk about it than the Recombobulation founder himself, Civic Media's political editor and multi-award-winning journalist Dan Schaefer. He comes on the show to make sure we're keeping up with all the news that's happening because, frankly, there's a lot going on and some stories fall through the cracks. So that's when Dan picks them up, brings them here, and we talk about it. Welcome back to the show, Dan. Love having you here. What have you brought us that is uniquely Southeastern Wisconsin today?
Well, we are getting close to back to school time. Many schools getting back into the classroom right around now. And Milwaukee Public Schools has been dealing with quite a lot. They underwent a leadership change this past year with the new superintendent, Brenda Casilius. And they've also had to deal with a lead crisis in many of the schools where many of the older schools throughout the district have dealt with problems remediating some lead paint, dealing with some other lead and water issues. And it was really a major crisis that ballooned during the last school year. And there was some updates as of late about, you know, addressing this in a number of schools across the district.
Tell us more about the update that did come from MPS on this.
So MPS sent a letter on August 19th to people in the MPS community to just update on the health and safety as we're just a couple weeks before the start of welcoming students back on Tuesday, September 2nd. So they updated on a number of the schools that had to be closed during last school year due to this lead crisis. So they had cleared a number of schools, including Fernwood Montessori School, Golden Meyer School. Both of those were among those that were closed down for part of last school year. So they have cleared 14 schools. And I think, they prioritized the schools that had some of the most glaring issues that prompted some of those closures last year. So they have cleared a number of those. But at the same time, there are still 36 schools that are in progress for dealing with some of that lead remediation, whether it's paint, whether it's in water. A lot of it is in paint for some of the older schools. And so it's still a huge lift for many of these schools and for the MPS school district to be able to address before people can come back and be there safely and not have to worry about some of these issues.
It just seems like a lot to take on. I mean, that it feels like they must have extra staff or extra experts coming through and working on these problems then with so many schools. You can't close down that many schools. The kids have to come in. People have to work.
Yeah. And I think, they've been working with the Milwaukee Health Department on this as well. The health department has taken a lead in some of the lead remediation that we've seen throughout Milwaukee. That was an issue that really came to a head, kind of 8 to 10 years ago in the city, led to the change in the health department, new leadership there. Now a couple leaders removed from that, but I think all schools will have to go through a process to be approved by the Milwaukee Health Department to make sure it is safe. And I think a lot of it is because so many of these schools, Milwaukee's an old city, right? So many of these schools were open before 1950 when, people were still using lead paint in a lot of ways. And so as they, go through the process, it's a very involved scientific process to make sure that people or places are safe from any of the lead paint or residue that might be on the walls in these places. It's a very involved process. And MPS has estimated that this lead remediation plan is going to cost about $16 million. It's obviously a district with a big budget. It's got a huge number of people who attend these schools. It's going to take a lot to deal with this. And it's still ongoing. It's still ongoing at many of these schools. But they're hoping to have as much of it as they possibly have cleared before students are back in the hallways.
When it comes to the funding, I know that there are federal and state mechanisms that can help with this, but I also know that because of where we are right now, a lot of programs are being cut. How does MPS plan on paying for this? Is it coming directly out of their budget, or are they going to seek partnership with other groups to help take care of the cost?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of it is, part of it is, you know, because it comes from the Milwaukee Health Department's budget and what they're doing to assist with the school district as well. But I, from what I understand, a lot of it just is going to kind of come out of the general fund. You know, there was a referendum to increase, you know, property taxes in Milwaukee not long ago to help with some of the other funding concerns that the district had. But, you know, this is obviously a special circumstance and it's not something that people really we're planning for. So it's going to be important for leaders to really take this on and make sure that this is getting adequately taken care of and it's not causing, you know, some sort of long-term financial problems too.
Well, it's definitely something we're going to keep our eye on. I know that Earl Ingram has talked a lot about lead in Milwaukee, and this is something that people are very concerned about, very actually kind of surprised about. And I'm sure you'll keep us updated on everything that's going on here. Dan, I really appreciate you stopping by and giving us the update on what's happening in southeastern Wisconsin. Have a great day, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
That was Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area, Mr. Dan Schaefer himself, and I truly appreciate him stopping by to share all of these important stories with us. If you want to find out more from Dan, you can subscribe to the Recombobulation Area. It's incredibly affordable and keeps you up to date with what's going on in Wisconsin with award-winning journalism. Or you can go to civicmedia.us/news. There you'll find other articles Dan is working on, including his Recombobulation Minute, which you can download and listen to it whenever, wherever you are, just like all of our shows at civicmedia.us/shows. I'm telling you, our website, incredibly versatile, incredibly informative. So go there, civicmedia.us, to find out more. And speaking of Dan, you want to stick around because at 8:35 this morning, Pat will be welcoming him to the show to talk more about politics in the state and catch up on those stories you may have missed over the weekend. So stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's Local Report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To keep up to speed with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to waukradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 6:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. We live in a world where news is coming at us from all angles all the time, so it's easy to forget some stories that happened here in Milwaukee. And one of those stories took place in April of 2025 when Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan was arrested by the FBI at the Milwaukee County Courthouse on federal charges of obstruction and concealing an individual. Last week, there was a development in the story, and that's why I invited former U.S. Attorney and host of Amicus, a law review, Mr. Jim Santel, to the show to break down everything that's going on in this case, because the arrest of Judge Dugan isn't just something that affects Wisconsin, it affects the entire country. We are talking to Mr. Jim Santel. He is the host of Amicus, a law review, which is available every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. I can tell you firsthand knowledge, it's like law school in a two-hour course once a week. You get a lot of information. It's great to listen to. And if you can't catch it live, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows, download episodes, subscribe to us as a podcast. I'm just telling you, listen to the show. He's here every Thursday to talk about what's going on in the news with regard to law and something very close to home. I know we've been talking a lot about Jeffrey Epstein in the past few weeks, but there have been some developments in the Judge Dugan case out of Milwaukee. Jim, can you give us a little rundown of what happened and what came out of the courts this week?
Yeah, absolutely. This is important. Again, Hannah Dugan charged in a federal indictment, basically with undermining the conduct of one of our federal agencies. We all know the alleged story there and the indictment that she's facing. She filed through her attorneys a couple of motions. One of them basically said that, gee, if Donald Trump is immune from prosecution, I should be also. So she raised an immunity defense. And then she also filed something called a 10th Amendment defense, which sounds very wonky, but we all understand it. It's basically saying, gee, this is a state matter. She's a state court judge in a state court proceeding. Federal government should have no involvement. 10th Amendment basically says there's a separation between those. It's kind of the state's rights version inside our Constitution. So that's pending. A magistrate judge, her name is Nancy Joseph, a little while ago, she recommended to Judge Lynn Adelman, who is presiding over the case, recommended that he deny those two motions. And sure enough, just early this week, Judge Adelman adopted that. And here's what he said. He said there's no basis for granting immunity simply because some of the allegations in the indictment, again, the charging document against Hannah Dugan, describe conduct that could be considered part of the judge's job. He puts that in quotes. And he said, as the magistrate judge noted, the same is true in the bribery prosecutions, concededly valid, where the judges were prosecuted for performing official acts intertwined with bribery. What is he saying with all that? He says, well, you know what? This is kind of a mixed situation. He says it may well be that there may be some criminal conduct here. It's mixed in with her role, plainly, as a sitting circuit court judge. And basically, he says, I'm going to let the jury sort that out. Mm-hmm. He also then dismisses the 10th Amendment argument, says no. Then at least as to here, the government still can still go ahead. So it is undeniably a victory, if you will, if we speak in those terms. All criminal prosecution, of course, is a tragedy also.
Yeah.
Victory for the government. It is a loss for the defense. But what the judge also said, again, the presiding judge, he said, before we go to trial, I want to know whether or not you're going to appeal my decision. That would go, Greg, as you and Calvin know well, to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And he scheduled a hearing for middle of next week. Everybody's going to come in. More reporting on this show and others, obviously, about what the parties say. Almost certainly, Hannah Dugan, through her very good attorneys, know them well, and they're very effective, even though they were not successful this time, will almost certainly say, we're going to take what's called an interlocutory appeal, another one of those big, fancy legal words out there. We're going to take this to the Seventh Circuit to determine whether or not Judge Adelman is right or wrong on that. The effect of that will be to delay this. Unlikely we'll see a trial anytime in this calendar year, much more likely into 2026 or beyond, again, depending upon what the Court of Appeals has done. So movement forward in the case, but not closer to real disposition. Charges still pending. She still remains a judge, but on administrative leave. She is not on the bench. Mm-hmm. And while this is all pending.
That was been by my next question statement is that she currently is not, she is not on the bench because she has, but she had her, she was suspended by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which at the time, and is still the current makeup of the liberal Supreme Court. They did it as a matter of process, as a matter of, this is what you do. I guess for me, like you've got to watch the, you've got to watch it all play out, but I just keep thinking back to that video and the statements. This was not some plan that was hatched. It was literally her showing this gentleman to the door, accessing the same hallway as these ICE agents, riding on an elevator with these ICE agents, exiting the building, and then being detained. And Jim, I am rarely called smart ever, but from what I see, I can't see any sort of criminal conspiracy to commit any sort of obstruction.
Right. And you know what? I'm going to describe you as smart because I think your comments are just that. What the judge is basically saying here is, you know what, on these kind of esoteric, it's a lot kind of arguments, I'm not going to take this away from the jury. We all know that when cases go to trial, when you've got witnesses on the stand who describe, Greg, exactly what you're just describing here, who is saying what to whom? Tell me about the dynamic. Show me where the elevator is. Tell me what was happening in the courtroom, in the hallway, what discussions we're having. All that becomes more factually relevant. And basically, the judge is saying, I want the jury to decide that, to sort this out. And it's often the case, this has been my practice and the practice of any other litigating attorney out there, difference between pretrial motions, getting rid of or not getting rid of cases, and taking them to trial. We'll see what happens. Even the Seventh Circuit affirms Judge Adelman, there's a long way to go before you get a conviction here based upon precisely the observations, Greg, that you have wisely, smartly made right now.
You can listen to Jim Santel's show Amicus, a Law Review on Civic Media Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. every single week. And if you can't catch it live, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for Amicus and download those episodes directly to your device. You can listen to them anytime, anywhere. Again, that's civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To take all your favorite WAUK shows with you on the go, download the free Civic Media app at the Apple or Google Play Store. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. You can't get around it, and you can't get away from it. The 2024 presidential election was a great shock to a lot of people, and with it brought self-reflection, specifically within the Democratic Party. There's been a lot of reckoning and a lot of talk about how to get the message clearer and get it out to the people. And I spoke to the chair of the Outagamie Democratic Party, Emily Cephos. She wrote a new article for the Recombobulation Area entitled How Democrats Can Rebuild Trust. And you might be thinking to yourself, I live in southeastern Wisconsin. Why am I listening to Outagamie? Well, her message is simple and it crosses communities and it's applicable anywhere in Wisconsin and anywhere in the country. You wrote a new article for the Recombobulation Area and its title is very simple and very to the point. How Democrats Can Rebuild Trust. Because in 2024, a message was sent for the voters. And for me personally, I feel like there's a lot of work to be done on the Democratic side. And I'd love to get your thoughts on where, I mean, whether we're talking, county parties, state parties, national parties, there's a lot of work to be done. Where do you see the first steps need to be taken, Emily?
Sure. I mean, we know that we're polling as a party at a 30-year low at this point. Like it is, we are not great at this juncture. But one of the things I wanted to point out is that not only is there, I think there's a perceived connection from like the tippy top of the Democratic Party to those of us that are on the ground, like just fighting for democratic ideals. Mm-hmm. And so I really want to bring that power back to the grassroots, to the people that are living in the communities that are just showing up for their neighbor and being like, look, I mean, frankly, like if we're being honest, Greg, like it's a two-party system and it's not perfect. And mm-hmm. So there's a lot of criticisms that I could also give to what's happening within the Democratic Party. But I know that in the way that we're structured with our government, that is the vehicle that we need to be pushing for at this point. And that's like how I perceive it. But I think that there's a lot that we can do at the grassroots, at the county party level, like with our neighbors to further like the cause, the ideology, and to build a lot of like power and trust back so that we can make the headways. We can start chipping away at the mountain, as it were. But all the while we're doing the right thing for our neighbors. And I think we forget about that. We're kind of waiting for someone to show up on a white horse and like carry us off into the sunset. And that's simply not going to happen. So let's take the power that we have like right here, right now, and start to utilize it in our own communities.
I'm going to quote from the article that you wrote for the Recombobulation Area, specifically with regard to the perception of the Democratic Party. It says, a recent survey showed our party's favorability at a net minus 32, which is the worst it's been in three decades. And You nailed something right there with regard to there's so many cooks in the kitchen because you've got your local parties, you've got your county parties, you've got your state parties, and everyone wants to talk and everyone wants to see the table. And I understand that. And I think what you're discussing is probably the best start because you can only control what's in front of you. And something that cannot be disputed, I know because I worked on the Obama campaign in 2008, I think one of the things that really made a difference was setting up all those offices in communities, knocking on doors and talking to people.
I mean, I think that's how you break through the noise, right? Like you are being bombarded with information, whether it is from news channels or from the money players, I guess, when it comes to our politics. But what, to your point, what makes a difference is talking to your neighbors. And I think that we need to employ all of the people that care about their communities in that way to start doing that again, because we're able to silo each other off, and we too often are like, politics is taboo. That's what we're taught in the Midwest as far as like our culture is concerned. And we need to get back to connecting the hurt that people are feeling outside their front door to the policy decisions that were made to lead to that hurt, because oftentimes it is politically tied. And frankly, people are working too hard to like dig into the weeds about like what the legislation was, what passed in committee, who did what. So we need to do that for them.
I mean, I get paid to look at the news every day from multiple news sources. And sometimes people will say, did you hear that story? I'm like, how did I miss that? Or you have to remember, oh yeah, Trump said that 3 months ago. I can't believe I forgot that. I feel like this was the first election in 2024 that podcasting really played a part. And that's a whole new level. Social media came in, that was one level. Podcasting, especially because you saw bro podcasts having on all the quote cool bit. And I'm going to say this, and I know people don't like it. I think one of the reasons Donald Trump won in 2024, and you might not like this, as a brand, he's cool. He has cool branding, cool merch. He's the guy who's like, hey, you want to have Taco Bell for breakfast this morning? Let's do it. You can do it. You're American. And people hook onto that thing of just like what that brash individualism. And that came across in a whole new medium. And so now in 2025, Democrats are left saying, what do we do next? How do we do this? And as you put in the article, it doesn't come with a slogan and it can't be finding the Joe Rogan. It's about really doing the work and investing the time.
Yeah. And I think like to your point, like that when we meet every month in Appleton and we're talking through like what we're going to do next, it's about recognizing the fact that like we can't control what's going on like with podcasts, right? Like we can't control who they're going to, fall in line for or do whatever with when it comes to the next, like the midterms or the next presidential. We can control what we're doing in our own communities and who we're talking to and how we're saying it. And I think like that is what's keeping me at this point as someone active in this political space from like curling up in the fetal position and just like kind of be like, all right, 3.5 years, we're going to white knuckle it. Like, it's really reassuring to know that if you actually do that work and you dedicate yourself and your team to doing that kind of work, you will see that you can make those inroads, that you can start to have those conversations. It is not something that people are like adverse to. It's simply because they're sucking in like the podcasts and the ads and the social media stuff, and no one's coming to counter it. Yeah. But you just need to counter it in a way that is community centered. And I think that we'll see a lot of progress that way.
My thanks to Emily Cephos, who is the chair of the Democratic Party of Outagamie County, for sitting down and talking to me about her new article, How Democrats Can Rebuild Trust, available at the Recombobulation Area right now. Stick around, because coming up on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is Brittany Merlot with the weather, Chad Holmes with his updates from Wausau, and hey, Dan Schaefer with politics here in Wisconsin, so stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach, and I'm back, and here is what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Her intro music is back, and that means one thing and one thing only. Civic Media's multi-award-winning meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here to talk about not only the weather, but things that have to do with the weather, how we keep ourselves safe, how we keep ourselves prepared for what's going on. And today we're talking about a piece of technology that's designed to keep us safe when we're on the go, doing kind of those more extreme things out in the wild, whether we're in the air, on the water, or going for a real long hike. So if you feel like I'm talking to you, you want to take a listen. Brittany, it's always great to have you here talking about the weather, talking about what's going on in the world of weather. But today we're going to focus on something a little different, and that's keeping yourself safe. And there's a new device out there that you can keep on your person when you're traveling, whether you're on the land or on water. Tell us more about the personal black box.
Yeah, so a little bit of a dark topic. Maybe we, try to stay away from that and thinking of the worst thing happening. But I like to plan. I like to be prepared. And I do like to venture out in the woods and places remote with no cell phone service quite often. So when I found out about this like personal black box tool that you can pretty much have on you wherever you are, I was pretty excited and felt, okay, I need this right now. So I first learned about it. I was at EAA talking to people and I met this lady from the Air Force. She turns out she works at the United States Mission Control Center and she handles all the data and all the messages and all the signals from this system. So what it is, it's a worldwide search and rescue satellite aided tracking system. 411 lives have already been saved from it last year. So it's already working. It's through NOAA, SARSAT, an emergency beacon. And this signal, basically, when it goes off, it can reach satellites up to 22,000 miles away in space.
Wow.
That satellite, yeah, it's really, really cool to think about. So that satellite picks up the data. It then sends it to a local user terminal, which is a receiving station that's here on land and stuff. And then that packages it up and sends it to the U.S. Mission Control Center, which grabs registration information, data on you, where it's at, who they need to call and contact. And it immediately goes to a local center where they send search and rescue, helicopters, boats, ambulances, whatever you need from that situation. So the key thing is you have to register it, right? So they know who's in trouble, who to contact, but it's always going to give that GPS location exactly where you are. And it's the quickest way to get a distress signal out and get help to you. And so they can find you pretty fast. And it goes through clouds. It goes through extreme weather. It goes through no cell phone service. And when we were talking, she was like, no, you need this on a boat. You need it when you're hiking. You need it when you're kayaking. And I was like, okay, how does it go off in the boat? What are you doing? Do you have to push a button in the emergency or what? And she said that the boat ones actually have a tab on them that when they're submerged, it disintegrates and sends the signal on its own. So if you're already in trouble and you can't hit that button, it's going off regardless and help is on its way to help you, which I think is crucial.
That is absolutely amazing. That reminds me of the feature on a lot of smartwatches now where if you fall over, the watch can sense it and will request you tell them, have you fallen over? Do you need help? And if you don't respond in enough time, it will call 911 for you and relay the information. Now, is this an app? Is this a device? How much does it cost? How does one get one?
Yes. Okay. So you can find this pretty much anywhere, online, sporting goods stores. There are different kinds. So there's different prices for that. Mm-hmm. The ones for like airplanes, those will go off if they're smashed, right? So that's going to cost a little bit more versus a tab disintegrating versus one that you have on you. You can just Velcro it to you, wear it on a lanyard and push a button. Those are much more affordable. But yeah, you can find them anywhere. And I highly recommend it. And so does she. It was pretty cool to hear about. I mean, a dark topic. You never want anything to happen, but if something happens, you want help as fast as possible.
Well, to be fair, though, Brittany, while it is a dark topic, we're talking about hypotheticals, and let's stay in the hypothetical and be proactive instead of having to be reactive on these matters. So it's always good to get this information out there. And this just sounds amazing. I can't believe I've never heard of this before. And it doesn't seem like the most modern of technology in as much as it feels like it's been around for a while. And this is the first time I'm ever hearing of it.
Same. And it has been around for a while. And it's just really cool to think about all of those satellites out in outer space could work to help us. I'm going to use them.
Love it. Now, what do we have coming up briefly in the weather this week? I know it got cooler last week. All of a sudden, it's 58 degrees. It feels like fall is coming here early. But what can we look forward to just in the days ahead?
Well, you know, another cold front coming through. How's that? Fall settling in. More rain. But hey, we stayed dry for a majority of the weekend. It was gorgeous for the holiday. Cold front moving through tomorrow should push a little bit of a quarter inch of rain or so through the area. But behind that, it does look like some mid-60s possibly Thursday and maybe some mid-60s as we go into the weekend as well. So fall weather is here. I mean, we saw frost advisories last week go out. I expect some more this week, possibly far up north. I don't think it's going to make its way here just yet, but hey, just know that the flannel weather is in full force.
I was going to say, time to bust out the flannel, time to put on those comfy wool socks, and as you put it, pumpkin spice and everything nice.
Yeah, hoodie weather, sweater weather.
Yeah, that's right. I'm deeply fluent in the language of hoodies, so I'm very much covered for the coming months. Brittany, thank you so much for being here. I always appreciate having you on the show, talking about not just the weather, but everything we need to know about the weather around us and how it affects us. And as you just put it, keeping us safe.
Absolutely. Got to do it. And I love it. Thank you so much, Greg.
Have a wonderful day, my friend.
You too.
Big thanks to Brittany Merlot for stopping by to talk to us about a very important thing. Always important to keep yourself safe when you're out there in the world. And if you want to read more from Brittany, that's simple. Go to civicmedia.us/news. There you will find a treasure trove of articles. And it's not just about the weather, but if you want to find out more, that's when you got to go to civicmedia.us/news. Stick around, because after Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is me, Greg Bach, hosting Matt and Aaron Air. And today I welcome Todd Alba, host of The Todd Alba Show, and Professor John Shelton, who will be here talking about the importance of unions and the power of the workers. So stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. Have a wonderful Tuesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:29.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.